Welcome to Sex, Drugs, and Murder, a podcast about true crime in the entertainment industry. Today, I'm going to throw back a little to the vibe I had in my very first episode. A little more toned down. Yes, there's going to be cursing, and you know, I have to be myself. But I will tone it back and be a little more relaxed and try to not be as all over the place. Well, I have ADHD. I can only promise so much, but I promise to be a little more, you know, keep it together, keep it a little cuter. Because that seems to what made the first episode do well. That, and I spent, I think, like an hour and a half dragging men into Hollywood, and that would keep me interested in, too. This month's episode will focus on Nollywood, a term used in Nigerian film industry, well, a term to refer to the Nigerian film industry. Under that term, there are many umbrella, it's like an umbrella term for many other industries that are broken up between regions, ethnic, and religious mostly. And there's, like I said, distinct film industries that each seek to portray the concern of their particular organization. However, there is an English language film industry, which is a melting pot for filmmakers from most of the regional industries in Nigeria. And this episode will capture some of the things going on behind the scenes, like a man who can't keep it in his pants, a man who almost lost it all to drugs, and an actress who shows how truly ruthless some people can be. Also, my cat is being very affectionate today, so if you hear lots of bumps and nuzzling to the mic, I apologize. He's really interested in the mic, and he's really interested in being in my face because he's a little cutie pie. But with that said, let's get into it. For this first section, we'll be talking about WizKid. That's his rapper name, his real name. Okay, I'm gonna give a disclaimer right here. I should have given it earlier. I am black, but I am not Nigerian. So I'm gonna do my very best to pronounce these names. Well, I'm not sorry. I'm not somebody who speaks Nigerian often or like Nigerian names. So I'm gonna struggle through some of these names and I'm gonna apologize for it. I practiced them yesterday at work. And then I came home and my vision went blurry. So I didn't record this last night. I'm better now, but that means I'm still going to be struggling to remember some of these pronunciations, so hang in there with me. So, WizKid, it was born as Adeje Abraham Balogun on July 16th, 1990. If you have never heard his music, I implore you to stop now here, go listen to Essence, which is with him and Tems, and then come back. So that you know that he's a good performer. He makes some bangers. But like I like to say on this podcast, you can be great, but whatever pedestal we put you on, we gotta make sure we're having every little aspect of that pedestal, which is unfortunately some sexual misconduct allegations. He is known to be a very prominent voice in the Afrobeats movement, and his blend is of Afrobeats, Afropop, R&B, Afrobeat, Reggae, Dancehall, and Pop. Like I said, I highly recommend you go listen to him. I'm not going to give you too much backstory on him. He's a Nigerian rapper, and he acts kind of like Drake. Just like personality-wise, like he gives me like Drake vibes, but if he was like 2% more about that life. But I will give you this fun fact about him. Well, I think it's a fun fact because, you know, she's always in her bad bitch era, but you know, she just dropped the album Beyonce. Yeah, that Beyonce. He was featured on her Brown Skin Girl. And I just think that's an interesting fact that he's worked with Beyonce. And he has 2 Soul Train Awards, a NAACP Image Award, a BET Award, and a Grammy. So he's a very, I'm trying to build him up. So when I'm like, he did all these things, you're like, okay. But he still makes a banker. That's the kind of person I am, okay? Like, I will separate the art from the artist, but, you know, I gotta know what artist I'm separating from. He has 4 kids with 3 different women. And they were born kind of spread out, except the middle 2. So it's 2011, 2016, 2017, and 2022. So you can just keep that in your head. 3 different women, 4 kids. And unfortunately, his mom passed away last year. In 2011, Nigerian Entertainment, so I'm going to be talking about 3 different sexual misconducts. This one I wouldn't call sexual misconduct, this is just controversy, but it was reported that he fathered his first child as 21, which here in America is not a huge thing, but there, that is a big thing in Nigeria. So after a thorough investigation, the newspaper concluded that he impregnated who was then an undergrad student, Sola. Oh my gosh, Ugadugu. When the story broke, close friends and associates of Wizkid did not confirm it because the DNA results were pending. He broke his silence on the story during several interviews in an interview with Nigerian Entertainment Today editor and denied having a child. So that's the controversy. He denied having a child. In another interview, and he said he really did not want to find himself in that particular situation. In December 2012, he denied have the baby scandal during an interview with Noe Ben Nwaku of The Punch. And in October of 2013, he uploaded a picture of himself and his 2-year-old Beluwatife Belogon to his Instagram account. And the photo confirmed that the 2011 report published by Nigerian Entertainment Today was correct. So the controversy is, you know, if you're not keeping track, he has a kid who he has now claimed as his, as his first child. But at first he was like, yeah, I don't want to do it with the kid, which, you know, is fair. He was 21. I'm 22. And as much as I love children, I do not want children right now. Respect to all children. The next one we're going to be talking about is, okay, so you know how I just went and told you to listen to a song he has with Tems? So I'm going to break that little bubble for you. Sorry. But he was accused of making unwelcome and inappropriate sexual advances towards Tems. And they're reacting to a video of them performing their song Essence at the O2 Arena in London. So, in the video, he attempts to carry Tems by putting his hands under her ass. However, she quickly removed his hands and seemed comfortable afterwards. You can look up the video. Nigerians, however, this is, I'm quoting an article, they took to social media and were like, apologize to this girl for putting your hands on her ass, and she didn't want that. And as I should. Americans, we should do that more. If a female performer looks uncomfortable, don't just brush it off and say that's the industry. Like, maybe be like, why are they uncomfortable? Why didn't they like ask for consent to do this before they went on stage? Why are they just popping up doing random shit on stage? Why are you doing random shit on stage? Don't go sideways while we're on stage in front of people. Because you might find the wrong one and get dragged. I'm kidding. I'm not. And then the last sex scandal. This episode was really interesting to research because a lot of the sources will say the same thing, and a lot of the sources don't really go into depth. It was kind of hard to find background on some of these people. So I wonder if the I mean, this is something I could research further, of how conservative Nollywood is with their media and how they treat people, because like that was like a sexual assault allegation. Like if you look at some of the headlines, they don't use harassment and assault, which I think are used interchangeably, yes, but I think one has more weight than the other, and I think they were trying to make it seem, I don't want to say heavier than it was, but like it was like Nigerians showed out on Twitter to like back up Tems, and that would not happen in America. So I really want to study, you know, that translation. And the boy is curled up around my feet, so the microphone is safe for now. But the last one is, so I love this this title, because it says another WizKid sex video hits internet. That's the title of the article I found this in. And I just like it because it implies that there's at least one more sex tape out there. See, and also this article is from, if I can find the year. Okay, I guess it doesn't want me to know. So, they, in this article, call him a kid superstar musician. I could not clarify if they meant that he's just a person who's been a musician since a kid, or if this incident happened while he was a kid superstar musician. So, the new scandal is coming on the heels of, so this is about 2011 also, on the heels of the same musician's alleged involvement with a female certain undergrad that resulted in the birth of a child. So that baby I mentioned sorry, my brain is broken. The lady I mentioned like 5 minutes ago, yeah, she's relevant, because around the time they were like, yeah, is this your kid or not? And he's like, yes, but not right now. he was said, so, to be shown fully nude and erect, and he had a girl who was, or sorry, a lady who was very robust and mature, just say MILF, actually, I'm gonna say MILF, because that sounds like a MILF to me. He was sitting nude, and he had a MILF bent over, and they were both oblivious to the camera, and appeared to be having the time of their lives, and people swore up and down that it was WizKid, but according to this article, they like never proved it was him. So, but the fact that there's another sex video out there, that means they can compare. Y'all compare and contrast. I'm not telling you to go watch porn. I mean, if you're 18 plus, do whatever the fuck you will. But you know, I'm not encouraging, you know, to support sex workers. That I just said the hardest week. You guys didn't see it, but I did the hardest week. Support sex workers, y'all. Especially, like, you can't say you don't support sex workers. Sorry, brief tangent while we're in the sex portion. You cannot say you don't support sex work and watch porn, because porn is sex work. You can't say you don't support sex work and then go check out a bitch's Twitter that's linked to her OnlyFans. No, that's not how it works. If you are gonna consume something, you have to be able to support it. Or at least in this case. You know, pay your sex workers. Tip them. Treat them with kindness. And make sure they're of age. Anyway, that's the sex portion. And I'm just going to tack on the drug section, because it's just short and sweet and cute. You know me, I love a comeback kid, I love an underdog. And so today, like I was saying, IMDb had about as much information on this man as Wikipedia, so it was like basically nothing. But I can confirm this person is a real person, because I watched an interview they did with the website Bala Nasha. But Uche Udipute was born on the 23rd of September in 1969 in Imo State, Nigeria. He is an actor and director, and he's known for Perfect in 2017, The Road Not Taken in that same year, and Damatila in 1996. He has a foundation called the Uche Udipute Foundation, which engages in activities such as education for orphans, health services for the less privileged, and financial support to widows for training purposes. The incident I will be referring to today is when in 2017, he was arrested by the Nigerian Drug Law Enforcement Agency, or the NDLEA, for drug trafficking, and he was jailed for 2 years and 3 weeks. He said he was open to the drug trafficking offer because he thought he could drastically change his living conditions when he wasn't getting any substantial movie roles and when he could not afford to feed himself, his house, or his family. He mentioned that although his colleagues abandoned him then for obvious reasons, he doesn't hold it against them as it was a time for him to learn a lesson. He said his major regret was letting his family down and letting his London friends take advantage of his situation by talking him into the act. He mentioned that he has never used drugs, and the encounter was the first time he saw the item. He also said he is grateful for a second chance and will never travel that route again, and that's taken directly from that interview. Yeah, I mean, like, literally, a lot of the drug cases I could find, a lot of them didn't have a lot of information, and a lot of them were, like, allegedly, so, like, this, I wanted to do something that was, like, confirmed happened, like, by the person, and, you know, Underdog, he was in a bad place, but he went to jail, he got out of it, and after he got out of jail, I mean, he has produced and directed and acted in a few movies, so he definitely, you know, turned his life around for him and his family. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I will come back and I will do the murder section. Okay, so it's kind of good that the previous section was really short, because this section is not short in the slightest. This section is really long. There's a lot of information to cover, and I leave out chunks of it just for the sake of my voice, because I do have to work today, and for the sake of you guys listening, and there's some stuff in the middle that's just all, it's kind of all boring crap, and I'll let you know when I get there, but I would like to say thank you to the, Onegegewara Blogspot, who did intensive research on this subject. Like, I use other sources to make sure that they were correct. Like, always, I always, you know, like, to fact check my sources. But, like, they went fully in depth. It took me almost 2 hours to read through. It was 2 blog posts about this. And it took me forever to read through it because it was that comprehensive. And it took me forever to, like, tone it down. So, thank you for them for writing it and being my main resource. Robbie Ismail was a star in the, well, they are still alive. I'm going to preface this, Robbie Ismail, she is still alive as far as I can find. I think she's just chilling on death row because, as you will find out, spoiler alert, what she does, like, literally, according to law, like, she sentenced to, like, I think, like, being hung, like, death by hanging. So, but we'll get into that later. Rabia Isma was a star in the Hausa movie industry, particularly called Kannywood, and there's not a person in that industry who doesn't know who she is because of her beauty and her acting prowess. Her stardom was, however, not just limited to Kano, where she was based, but Abuja, where she was known in Lagos, and Ogun. Rabia Isma, also known as Rabia Cecilia, was indeed a screen goddess in her own right. She had earned her stripes by featuring in popular Kannywood movies like Menkisa, Aya, and Zumeyaga, amongst other films. There was no doubt that she was destined for the top of the acting profession. Some of her fans were even thinking that she would leave Kano for Hollywood. Well, that was until one fateful Christmas day in 2002, and if you are a 2002 baby, rise up. Happy birthday. Happy 22nd birthday. I think all two babies are turning 22 this year. I turned 22 this year. Some background on Remy before the day of the accident. She was said to be a no-nonsense woman, influential, especially among politicians. She was pretty and had lots of money to throw about from reportedly she had gotten from male friends and a chain of businesses she managed in the transportation sector. Street urchins, popularly called Indaba in the north, were very loyal to her because she gave them lots of money and they were always ready to deal ruthlessly with anyone whom she ordered them to. She was known to control the men around her because of her beauty. A well-known figure at the alleged notorious Abadi Street of Sabongari, Kano, where she lived as a prostitute, allegedly. It is said that she adopted the name Cecilia in a brothel where she hawked sex. Okay, so I guess not allegedly. But some of the sources I said that, I guess some sources don't want to believe that she's a prostitute, but all of the facts add up to me that she was doing sex work to probably help give her that life of luxury she was so desperately yearning for. She was also known to be absent on location when they filmed. She had great influence when she was active in the Hausa film industry, and she dodged being registered, though, in the Kannywood film industry and snubbed several threats of expulsion by the leadership of the community. As an actress, her acquaintances said she had a habit of quarreling with others, even when on location, which is why most of her female colleagues avoided her, and because of her quote-unquote queer habits. I couldn't find anything supporting that she has queer habits, but she was a sex worker, so that's probably where that would come into play. When the news reached her colleagues that she had murdered her boyfriend, spoiler alert, she murders her boyfriend, none of them are surprised. They're like, yeah, that sounds like her. She could do it. She's fucking crazy. And now this story, it's about to get very narrative, because that's how they wrote it, and I can only rewrite so much. And honestly, the narrative way they write it kind of helps make this story easier to follow. So I promise this is not I don't want to use the word plagiarized. But in some sections, it's going to sound really plagiarized because I'm a very good writer, and I apologize for that. Our story starts with Adu Muhammad, a taxi driver in the Kano metropolis. He was driving along Zoo Road on Christmas Day looking for a fare when he sees a familiar figure standing by the road. That figure would turn out to be Rabi Cecilia, the popular actress. She wanted to hire his service for the day, and they agreed on, I think it was about 250 naira per hour, and that's their currency there. So I don't know what that conversion is, but imagine it's 2002, it's Christmas, you can't spend it with your family, you're out looking for a fare, and this person's like, I'm gonna pay you a shit ton of money if you just drive me around all day. He said say less, and she hopped in the car. Their first stop was the Farm Central Police Station. She went inside, and they picked up her boyfriend, Awalu, who had been detained for a traffic-related offense. She filled out a bunch of paperwork, and her boyfriend was released to her. From there, the couple went to Awalu's friend's house, and from there to Awalu's house, Awalu's the boyfriend, where his sister was waiting for them. Uma was like ready to see her brother. She is important and integral to the story because she was like, where's my brother? I cannot find him. I'm very anxious for his return. Awalu explained to his sister how he had been detained overnight at the police station. She wanted him to eat, but he was like, no, I'm going right back out with homegirl, and I'll be back soon to bathe and eat. No, you wouldn't, honey. This would actually be the last time you see your sister. Oop. I'm so sorry, y'all. Do I have any other alarms I need to turn off? What if Oh, I was like, why do I have so many early alarms for this morning? But it was so I could get up and record this episode. But I'm already up. You ever go to the bathroom and you can't go back to sleep? That might be that's not TMI. That's just asking a question. You don't have to answer. But like, do you ever go to the bathroom and then you can't go back to sleep? And it'd be like 3 a.m.? I'm not saying I've been up since 3 a.m. I've been up since 5 a.m. and I'm just now sitting down to record this because I wanted my voice to wake up, you know, feel mature. But back to the story. Oahu said to his sister Uma, I will be back to shower and eat. I'm just gonna go hang out with my girl Ruby for a little bit. And then she never sees him again, from what I can tell. The couple decided to have a picnic at the Tiga Dam. I think she decided they were having a picnic at Tiga Dam, where she gave him an eclair's chocolate. Remember this. Write this down if you're trying to figure out how she did it before I tell you, write down eclair's chocolate. The Tiga Dam is a major reservoir on the Kano River, and it's the main tributary of River Hadaja. Ado, the taxi driver, was not very familiar with the route, but eager to earn his fare, he said, fuck it, I'm gonna take this couple down there anyway, let me ask for some directions. Arrived at Tiga, but the actual dam was still a distance away. Rabi got down from the cab and asked for directions to the dam, and the people she asked offered to lead them to the dam. Otto packed his cab. Sorry, my cat's doing something. Inky? Okay, we're good. Otto parked his cab, and he watched as the couple dashed to the river for a swim. He's kind of like Nancy Drew, okay? He's picking up things, he's putting pieces together, okay? He noticed one thing about Olalu, that he was not particularly excited to go for the swim. He looked tired and withdrawn. He soon stopped swimming and came out of the water, but Rabi would have none of that. She pushed him back into the water. He struggled and managed to crawl back to the bank of the river, and again Rabi pushed him into the foaming waters of Kanu River. Despite his weakened state, Oahu found his way back to the bank of the water. Even to Otto, who was watching from the safety of his cab, it was apparent that Oahu was cold, like shivering. Robbie had to literally start a tiny little fire. It's a little fire to keep her boyfriend warm. Otto soon realized, however, that something sinister was going on when Rabi approached him and was like, can you help me leave this to here? Like, I don't want him to come with me. Can we just, like, leave him? Otto rightly refused. He was like, how can we leave him if y'all came together? I was like, I was in the front of the taxi, and I was driving y'all, and y'all were both in the back. And he didn't look too good. He didn't look too good down by the water, either. I feel like we should take him. And after this, like, he already knew her intentions were less than noble, and then she asked him for gas. And he's like, she has no car. Why does she need gas? She does not have anything that would require gas on her. He didn't know whether he was trying to kill Oahu, or if Oahu and Rabi were trying to kill him and steal his cab and use the petrol to burn his body and like leave like no trace. Which, you know, when I overthink, that's how the extreme I go to. Like, if I don't, like, literally that's what I think of when I like overthink. He was like, whatever is going on, whether they're trying to kill me or she's trying to kill him, I want no part in it. Girl, you are not getting this petrol. Uh, seeing that Ado was, like, not currently with it and was not going to help her plan, she was like, okay, well, just help me get his ass back in the cab and take us back into town. He stopped to buy fuel, I think at least once. Yeah, so, okay. Ado, sorry, I'm trying to read my own notes, and some of them are handwritten. So, that I could do that on a Microsoft Go. Sorry, brief tangent. I can do that on my Microsoft Go. I can write something in Docs, download the PDF, and then I can write notes on it. That's something I realized I could do the other day, and it's, like, really fun. Except, my shorthand is kind of atrocious. So I struggle to read my own handwriting sometimes, and sometimes I go back in and I add more information to sections. So, like this one, Otto stopped to buy fuel for his taxi. Robbie, again, was like, yo, let me get some fuel, but at this point, if y'all are at a gas station, get your own. Like, don't make this man an accomplice. He's already an accomplice. He doesn't realize. He's already an accomplice. But, c'est la vie. But Robbie, she's a femme fatale. She's an actor. She's an actress. So she was like, you know what? I know what I need to do. I need to turn on the magic. So she turned on the magic and was like, oh no, I left my bag all the way back at the fucking dam. That's so far that we literally had to stop for gas. Otto was like, he's with it. He was like, no, this bitch crazy. But legally, like, according to his contract, he had to take her back to the dam to find her stuff, and that he was not going to get paid if he didn't take her back according to his contract. Poor boy will go through it trying to get this fucking paycheck, as I will talk about later. And all the while, all this is happening. The petrol, her trying to, like, get this man to help her kill her partner. Awana, he's out of it. He's unconscious. He's knocked. And it becomes clear that chocolate she gave him earlier had sleeping pills in it. Or something. Because he was drugged. He was knocked. Back at the dam, Ado expected the actress to go and look for the handbag she had claimed she had forgotten. He was surprised when she asked him to assist her in bringing down the barely conscious Awalu. As soon as Awalu was out of Ado's cab, he dipped. He said, fuck this, I'm out. He did not pick up his fare. He was just like, I need to get out of here before this bitch kills me too. Though he couldn't place his finger on it, once again, he knew it. Robbie's intentions towards Awalu were not pure, and they weren't. So, good job, Nancy Drew. You figured it out. You sensed the vibes and that they were not immaculate. And after that, after all of this hubbub of the day, he's calmed down. He thinks he's safe. What does he find in the back seat? Robbie's handbag. You know, the one that she left at the dam? But it's in the back seat of his cab. So he knows, oh shit, I am going to have to go give her this bag. He estimated that he was with them, okay, for about 5 hours. So when he sees this bag, he's thinking about that fucking paycheck. Get that bag. Literally. And they were paying him about 250 naras per hour. So they were owing him like $2,000 in naras. Actually, what's that conversion rate? What is 2,000? USD. Okay. So, in their money, I feel like that's a lot. In our money, that is almost $2. It's $1.74. Oh, wait, but this was 2002. This is why I love the internet, because I literally, sorry for all of the long silences. Okay, so it's still about a little over half a dollar, well, a little over a dollar and a half, but Yeah, I need to be able to look up things like that. Like, what was the exchange rate when I was born? Although he didn't know where Robbie lived, he still remembered where he went when Awalu changed his clothes, so where his sister was. And this was in the Yadi Yadi. He made up his mind to go there early on Boxing Day to collect his fare and return the bag. If you don't know what Boxing Day is and it's been your whole life and you're scared to ask what Boxing Day is, it's the day after Christmas. So it's the 26th of December. Otto arrived at Awalu's residence early on the morning of Boxing Day, December 26th. Otto said December 26th. I don't even celebrate Boxing Day. Even though my dad's Canadian, and I think they celebrate Boxing Day, so whatever. He did not go there alone. He was like, yo, this bitch is crazy. I am gonna bring some friends to accompany me. Once he had parked his cab at Waldo's residence, he was surprised to see Ruby arriving on a motorcycle. He handed over the bag to her, and he quickly made sure everything was still in her purse. He then asked for his fare. To this, Ruby responded that Awalu would pay him. No, he would not. Otto was like, no. You are the one who chartered my services for the day. You are the one who is going to have to pay. And first he was like, okay, whatever. Let's go to Awalu and let's get my money. At this point, Uma, who knew Ruby as her brother's girlfriend, told them Awalu had not come back home to sleep. Again, Adu insisted that Ruby must take him to Awalu. Instead of taking him to where Awalu was, she took him to a house off of Dankora Road, off Zoo Road, and then she gave him a sum of 2,000 naira. Adu collected his money and he dipped. He was like, okay, I got my money, she got her bag, leave me the fuck out of this. He would not be left the fuck out of this. Uma, who is Owalu's sister, was settling down to do her morning chores when Ruby returned, this time alone. She was eager to find out whether she had brought news about her brother, and Ruby told her that her brother was hale and hearty, but that he was busy at a film location. He had sent her to bring his video CD and television set. To confirm that she had truly been sent by Owalu, she showed Uma his ID card, vehicle particulars, and the key to his room. Uma was convinced, and she allowed Ruby to take away the items. Some hours later, Uma was shocked to see Ruby again, the third time this day, and Ruby told Uma that Awalu had asked her to bring him his CD player, or CD recorder. This time, Uma refused. She insisted on being taken to wherever her brother was, but Ruby pacified the distraught and obviously suspicious woman. Yeah. Her brother is missing. Of course she'd be suspicious. And you keep taking a shit. by telling her that she would see the film director to allow Awalu to come back as his family were buried. She left without being able to take the CD player. That's okay. We'll find out what she does with that other stuff, though. Uma waited, like, for hours and hours and hours and hours for her brother to come home, as promised by Ruby. If she saw anything that evening, it was certainly not her brother. To her, everything was like a dream. If Awalu was indeed at a location, as claimed by Ruby, he would have at least called to inform her. She wondered why a film director would detain an adult without allowing him to call his family members. When Adu left Ruby on December 26th, he had hoped that he had heard the last of the strange couple, but like not even 2 days later, he was driving his cab alongside the current road when he saw Aminu Amin. I literally cannot figure out who this person is in relation to Rabi Isma or Walu. I think he's just somebody who got twisted up in this. But Adu was like, you know what? I'm the black Nancy Drew. Well, the Nigerian Nancy Drew. Let me go holler up on my boy. And he wanted to know if Ahmed knew anything about Awalu after he got left at the dam. Ahmed was pleased to see him and pleaded with him to follow him to Awadu's relatives, who had not seen him since the day he was released on bail by the police. And remember, he was really in and out. So he, when he was seeing these people for the last time, it was very brief, very quick. And then that's how his family was found out that, oh, Ruby was the last person with him. She knows about his disappearance, because she caused it, but they didn't know at the time that she had caused it, or yet that she had caused it, just that she was involved. They all trooped to the Saban Garvey Division, where a case of abduction was lodged against Rabi Isman. The police swung into action, and promptly Rabi was arrested. She was asked to assist them in finding the missing actor. At the police station, she claimed that on getting back to Kanu on Christmas Day, she told one Ibrahim Shiru that she had left Awadu in the bush and that the two of them went back and met Awadu. According to her, Ibrahim carried Awadu to an abandoned building and left him sleeping in the inner room of the house. Following this information, Supo Adokopoi, the DCP, went with some police officers and searched every room in the house. Awadu was nowhere to be found. I'm going to take a water break and then I will come back and I'll finish this section. It's just, if you are allergic to pollen, I swear it feels like I've been swallowing it and no amount of Claritin or Benadryl is clearing it up. But yeah, I'm going to take a water break. I might take a hot water break. But then I will come back and I will tell you what happens after Robbie gets got. And we're back without having have had a hot drink because I'm out of honey. Even though I could have sworn, actually, that's a lie. No, I just remembered I have flavored honey, and I have one that has cinnamon, and I have chai tea. I also have Earl Grey, and I have vanilla. Okay, whatever. I'm just realizing that I do actually have more honey than I realized. But that's okay. I'll have a hot drink when I finish this up. Because this case... like, she's just like a real-life femme fatale. She was like, you know what? I want his property. I want his money. So I'm kill him. Literally. She... like, this is how they caught her ass. The police were undaunted. They put in the fucking work, okay? We are talking about Otto, is the Nigerian Nancy Drew, but he like, started a whole group of Nigerian Nancy Drews. Like, they were going to find Owalu, and they were going to find his killer, or his kidnapper, or whoever had done him harm. They spread out all over the Kanu metropolis, which is how they found one Yaha Usman. He was the one that Robbie sold Awalu's television and VCD for 8,000 Naira and 4,000 Naira, respectfully. And then they found a person named Halima who had bought Awalu's phone, which is a Nokia. That's just important for you to know that it's a Nokia, for 1,000 Naira. Finally, the police found Adebayo Abdul-Karim, who she had given a Walu's car stereo and two speakers. Inky, if you're gonna make biscuits, can you choose a spot? Thank you. He's just moving all around. Like, choose a spot. I don't care if you make biscuits on me. Just, you know, commit. Commit to stabbing me with your claws. Confronted with these fresh facts that she left a paper trail. Like, she literally left people who could identify her, who knew where she had been, what she had been doing, who saw her with Awadu while he was drugged the fuck up. Like, honey, do better. This is why you're in jail. But she broke down in tears because she had been got. She thought she could have been got. She still thought she couldn't get caught, but she got. It's like, girl, be so fucking for real. Your tears are just because you got caught, not over this man who you obviously did not love. She confessed to pushing Awadu into the river because she's just a girl and she pushed him into the river. The DPO and the officers once again took her to Tiga, and at the dam site, she showed them exactly where she had pushed a Walu into the water. The police officers also saw coal and other traces of the fire she had made on Christmas Day, collaborating her story that she was there on Christmas Day. With these new revelations, the police began a detailed search of the water and the surrounding areas, which finally paid off when about a kilometer from where he had been pushed into the water, a Walu had been found. The police went back the following day with officers from the fire service and a medical doctor from Aminu Kano Teaching Hospital, as well as members of Awali's family. The body was brought out by fire services, and police photographers went to work. They took photographs of the body from different angles, and in some of those shots, you can see Ruby pointing and crying at her now deceased boyfriend. With investigations completed, Ruby Ismaili, aka Ruby Cecilia, the movie superstar, was arraigned before His Lordship, Justice Halaru, and was charged with the offense of culpable homicide. When the charge was read to her, she was asked to make her plea. She said, I understand the charge. I'm not guilty. Hello? You literally admitted to pushing him into the water, and now he's dead. One of the people who saw you last with him, who saw him last alive, said that that man was out of it. If you pushed him in, he was dying. He was not awake enough to save himself. So girl, if 1 + 1 = 2, then what the fuck is this? At the trial, okay, the trial, this is kind of crazy to me. So the prosecution had 9 witnesses in support of the case. That's not the crazy part. You had Uma Ibrahim, Awali's sister, Adu Muhammad, the taxi driver, Sergeant David Watsov, an investigator with the CID, and also testified. And he was the one who found the decomposing body in the water. So like, this is the dude who said, oh my God, that's the body. That's him. Ruby changed it up at trial, okay? She changed her statement. She had no witnesses. It was just herself. She was her only witness for her defense. According to her, when Adu, the driver, dropped them off at the Tika Dam and drove away in annoyance, she and Awalu, who was now unconscious, decided to trek back to the main road. She claimed that they came across a motorcyclist and pleaded with him to carry them to the highway, but the cyclist insisted on carrying only one of them. It was decided that the cyclist would take her first and then come back for Awalu. She claimed that when they got to the junction, the cyclist refused to go back to pick Awalu. She had no choice but to go back all the way to Kanu, leaving Awalu to his fate. The trial judge, His Lordship, Justice Halaru, he called bullshit. He was like, I smell something stank in here, and it's not me. He considered all of the evidence that was brought by the prosecution and the defense. Did the defense actually bring evidence? But December 5th, 2004, so he was killed December 2002, and then the trial, just 20 days short of the anniversary of Awalu's death, comes to an end when the justice finds Ruby Ismail guilty of murder. She was therefore convicted accordingly and sentenced to death by hanging. On January 17th, 2005, oh my God, I would be like freshly 3. I'd be freshly 3. Like, literally the birthday, I'd be freshly 3. Ruby appealed against the judgment of the High Court Kano. The appeal was filed at the Kudana Division of the Court of Appeal. Amongst other grounds, she contested the judgment on the ground that she learned the trial judge erred in law by holding that the case against her was not that of drugging, but of drowning Awalu. technicalities, people technicalities. In fact, there's a whole bunch of technicalities. She does not. Sorry. So there's a bunch of stuff that happens after that and into this next part. That's a bunch of legal stuff that I genuinely don't understand. From what I can understand, because of this, she's just chilling in jail. It's really hard to find information about what happened after that, but from what I can figure out, they changed her sentence, because she's not dead, obviously, so they didn't hang her. So I'm thinking she's just living out probably like a life sentence, or close to a life sentence. If you know, hit me up and let me know, because I only have access to what sources I have access to as an American. My computer rejects VPNs. It does not like VPNs. It just will not work if I turn on a VPN, which is fine. I don't use VPNs, but whatever. We're gonna fast forward about 6 years. On December 16th, 2011, Rabia Smal mysteriously escaped from prison. Like, she got out, and people were like, oh, this is an inside job. Like, immediately. Because there was no tunnel, there's no broken walls, nothing to show her, like, trying to, like, dig her way out of the tunnel. So somebody had to have helped her. Her escape was found when, on that morning of December 16th, when they went around for roll call, she was missing. Her ass was gone. It was confirmed by the Chihuahua State Comptroller of Prison, who, she got help from on the inside. So, you know, we have literally, a comptroller saying, oh no, she got help to escape. She probably used her feminine wiles to get somebody to help her escape. There were six prison wardens on duty at the time of when she went missing. They all got interrogated. It was assumed that she would be found soon on account of her famous figure, as well as the notoriety of her case, and I think they literally met her figure. The prison authorities were soon joined by sister law enforcement agencies in their manhunt, or, you know, woman hunt, if you'd like. For the escaped prisoner. They spread out their dragnet across the country. 1 year went by. They did not find her or a trace of her. It was like she had simply disappeared into thin air. The second and third years followed along in same succession. No news. She was nowhere in sight. By the time we got to her fourth year, they thought she would not be found, and by the fifth year, her escape came and went. Her file was starting to collect dust. And then this is where she fucked up. Year six, 2017, she ended up back in through the arms of the law, of the Department of State Security, while attempting to flee the country. According to reports, Ruby was caught along the Lagos-Benin border. Her final destination was not known, but it was certain that the road she was caught on was not back towards the prison or the crime scene. As far as I can tell, she currently resides in prison. She's just probably vibing, being manipulative, and trying to see if she can get out again. Well, folks, what did you think? Did you enjoy today's episode? Did you enjoy the people I talked about? Or at least the vibe of the episode? I tried to be more calm down, drinking more water so my voice hopefully doesn't get as raspy, as I know my voice can get really raspy in clips if I've been talking for a long time. But, you know, if you like it, if you like the vibe, leave a comment. If you like the vibe, if you are like, you know what? My friends should listen to this. Share it with them. Share it with your friends. And you know, you guys can be in a fun club together called the SDM Club. It's $1 a month, and you will get bonus content. So like this month, I'm letting SDM Club members choose the bonus content for the month. So it's either going to be a movie or it's going to be a live research for my next video. And whichever one I do will probably be on camera. So if you're the kind of person who likes podcasts where you can see their face, you know, I won't put on makeup, but I'll do my facial routine so my skin will be glowing. My heart and my mind is clear, and I'm hungry. So I'ma just sign off by saying, that's it for now, folks. See you next time on Sex, Drugs, and Murder, a podcast about true crime and the entertainment industry. See you later.